It's time for Brother Larry's Sinner's Sunday. Oh yeah. You tell him, Larry. Brother Larry coming at ya.
Thank you, Brother Dre. Thank you, Lariettes. Welcome, everyone, to Sinner's Sunday. Here we all are in our little wooden chapel. Couches and recliners. No ass-punishing benches here. There's a bar in the back and outside plenty of hot barbecue. Our cozy Sunday hang. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming over. This is our 25th gathering, and each week there are new revelers joining our little party, so I want to give you a quick catch-up. This place came out of That Larry Show, which resides down the road a piece at the TNS Dojo, right there at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. Where truth lives, we like to say. And yeah, we've got a thing for truth at the dojo and here at the chapel. Part of what we've been doing here for 25 weeks is attempting to discover the real JC, not the one that's been fabricated over many centuries by the corporate God providers. No one and no thing in the history of our planet has been more distorted, twisted, warped, and reworked than Jesus T. Christ. What's the T for? His middle name, of course, Truth. He never lied, not even once. He did a lot of other stuff those corporate God providers like to deny or gloss over. We've established he had a terrific sense of humor. He gave people funny, sometimes snarky nicknames. He cursed. On at least two occasions that we know of, he got violent and kicked ass. He probably drank some and enjoyed the company of ladies. He was a 360 kind of guy, and he would have to be, because he had charisma shooting out of his pores like green lasers. How else would someone become the most popular guy on Earth for more than 20 centuries? For the rest of us, fame is fleeting. For him, it's eternal. No mealy-mouthed, passive, sad-eyed, meek dweeb could ever achieve what he has. No, that dude was a charm bomb. But the corporate God providers don't agree with that, do they? They don't like the real Jesus very much at all. And I don't think he'd approve of many of them. Ooh, just a very, very few. Today, let's have a look at one of his many talents. His mastery of verbal judo. He was the champ. In his time, and as a young dude, he would successfully debate the slickest, best-educated men in the world. From a Roman prefect, that pilot guy, right, to the governor, Herod, to Pharisees and Sadducees, who were the corporate God providers of their time. He left every one of them tongue-tied, pissed off, and sometimes humiliated. He was a winner undefeated. How did he do that? More importantly, how can we do that? We live in some perilous times. Like never before, our words can destroy us. Actions have become almost superfluous for indictment or conviction, huh? Careers, corporations, reputations, friendships, romances, marriages, partnerships, all kinds of relationships are derailed and or destroyed every day over one wrong tweet or post or comment. How would JC fare in the digital realm? Would he have a Twitter account? How would he distinguish his from the hundreds of fakes until his was verified with that stupid little badge? What would he tweet? How would he deal with trolls? He'd probably be in there 5 minutes until some reeing puke bag would report him for hurtful or threatening messaging, and his account would be permanently suspended. There's a Bible passage that always makes me laugh out loud because it evokes a funny image, and it might be something inscribed over the door of that place where we hang out every Tuesday, the dojo. The line is originally from Psalms in the Old Testament, and then it shows up again in the New Testament, where it's referenced in several Gospels. I guess JC got a kick out of it as well. It could easily be the one that might get him banned from Twitter. It says, "Sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet." It's kind of a funny visual, isn't it? You could want to have your enemies put before a firing squad or vaporized by a death ray or maybe slit their throats and hang them out a window. But a footstool for your feet? That's different. Imagine that. Some SOB you just loathe suddenly upholstered alive with buttons and tassels, maybe in a moss green velvet, just waiting for you to put your feet up on them. Like that cartoon footstool in Beauty and the Beast. Beyond the amusing idea of this, there's also a backstory worth exploring. A story about power and authority and oral combat in JC's fantastic abilities as a verbal judo master. So he's hanging around this temple, giving his take on things. And that's when some of the guys who ran the temple, the corporate god providers, take umbrage at his, what? Poaching preaching, I guess. And I can understand that. They are men of the cloth themselves. So instead of having him bounced like a vagrant, they challenge him by asking, quote, "By what authority are you doing these things?" And JC, being doubtless the greatest debater who ever lived, employs the most basic verbal judo move. He answers their question with a question. He tells them, "Was John's baptism of human or divine origin?" Imagine how pissed those guys got. You know they were thinking, "Who's this smart mouth punk? We were asking the questions." And that's always the way with those in some position of authority, right? Whether real or imagined, they want to be asking the questions. Cops, teachers, congressmen, senators, judges, attorneys, the guy getting asked the questions never has the upper hand, does he? No. But in a single statement, JC flips the situation on the priests. By this time, JC's wild man cousin, John the Baptist, had a pretty big following as well, so the Pharisees were reluctant to tell him to pound sand and drag his ass out of their temple. And that temple is filled with people who have been listening to JC. So these priests have to be careful. They don't want to look like jerks or dummies. So they call a little huddle and thrash it out. And one guy says, "Okay, now, if we say it's divine origin, that might open up a can of worms."
"Yeah, but if we say it's human origin, his people might stone us. They believe that his nutty cousin John is some kind of prophet."
"All right, I guess we just better say we don't know."
So they tell him they don't know. And how does JC answer? With one of his greatest, snottiest, "In your face, you pissants, you don't dictate to me" retorts, he tells them, "that I'm not telling you by what authority I'm doing these things." Can you imagine their rage? He not only stymied them, he made them look and sound like morons. If that exchange was on YouTube, it would get a zillion hits with a title like, "Son of God Does Verbal Judo on Punk Priests and Owns Them." It's one thing to be embarrassed privately, quite another to get intellectually throttled before your own crowd. The people who listen to you and hand you money every week at church, those priests were furious. So they sent out spies, yes, spies, to see if they could catch JC in some prosecutable offense. They wanted him and his smart mouth and his ragtag posse off their streets and out of their temples, because he was bad for business. So these punk spies, who doubtless looked and sounded like today's bedwetting soy boys, because people never change. They catch up with JC, and they think they'll get over on him and nail him. And in perfect, sneaky punk fashion, they flatter him first, right? And one of them says,
"Teacher."
That's good. Give him a respectful title.
"Teacher, we know that you speak and teach what is right in accordance with the truth."
Okay. There's the setup with flattery oplenty. Now here comes the verbal sucker punch.
"Is it right for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not?"
JC looks at these two punks like Triple G sizing up a couple of Golden Gloves flyweights. He was surely amused. And he tells the soy boy spies to give him a coin, which they do. Right there, right there. He was taking control of the situation, making them do something for him. Okay? Then he asks them a question, a really stupid, obvious question that only a child or a weak-minded adult would answer. And he asks them, "Who do you see on this coin?" And the bedwetting whips answer,
"Caesar."
And he tells them, "Then give Caesar what is Caesar's, and God what is God's." And they have no reply, and they have to go back to their bosses with nothing. Pretty damn cool. So if we're trying to learn from the master, commit his techniques to muscle memory. When some punk is trying to box you in, don't answer his question. Ask him one instead. And the farther off topic, the better. That's a great way to show contempt, but not in a way that will give them something with which to hang you. Kind of saying F you, while not exactly saying F you. And always reserve the right to say, "I'm not telling you." It's a good answer. Worked great for the master, didn't it? And when they dispatch character assassins, know their looks and beware their smiles and flattery. It's always a setup. Of course, the Caesar gambit is a little stale, so instead of asking who's on the coin, still make them do something and have them flip and call it. No matter the outcome, you can tell them, "Oh, you lose. Conversation's over." JC was really beautiful. He didn't just outmaneuver his adversaries, he did it in a manner that made them look and feel like the losers they were. He was the verbal judo master of all time. Hey, thanks for hanging with us today, everyone. If you'd like to support this ministry, the only one of its kind in the world, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Drop us an email at thatlarryshow@gmail.com and come on over to the dojo this Tuesday, where we have a cool show lined up for you, Going Borneo. You know you want to do it. Quit the job. Throw away your razor and fancy shoes and head for the hills and get off the grid, off the radar, and that hamster wheel that life can become. We'll see you Tuesday.